Good afternoon and morning. Oh, near afternoon. Good morning to everyone here in the Aleutians Eastboro and all across the country on APRadio.org. My name is Austin Roof. We're here today, and it's a real honor and a privilege to have with us today the commissioner for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and the deputy commissioner for the Fish and Game as well. Doug Vincent Lang and Rachel Baker are on the air, and just want to check out you guys there. Can you hear us okay?
Yeah, we can hear you fine. Thank you.
Commissioner Lang, I want to say thank you so much for your time, and Deputy Commissioner Baker, thank you. I know your schedules are so busy, and so for you to come on the air and talk about this Fisherman Relief Program is really above and beyond, so thank you for your time.
Thanks for having us. We're happy to be here.
Oh, no, yeah, and I've just been saying that for you guys. We know you're so busy, and thank you so much for making the time to come talk about this program. It's really above and beyond, so very much appreciated. Know that you have a lot on your plate, but this is a great opportunity, and a lot of people I don't think in the Aleutians Eastboro know about this yet, but what we're talking about today is money that was passed through the CARES Act to support fisheries, not just fishermen, but processors, subsistence fishermen, all sorts of different interested parties. Can you give a quick explanation about what this program is and who it affects?
Okay, so Congress, when they passed the multi-trillion dollar CARES Act or whatever it was, included in that language $300 million for fisheries relief due to COVID-related impacts. And when we first got wind of this, we expected that Alaska was going to see a lion's share of that, given the Alaska accounts for most of the seafood landings in the nation. But subsequent to that, National Marine Fisheries Service determined that how the allocation to the different states across the nation would go. And they put a maximum cap that a state could receive, and Alaska was one of the states that fell underneath that maximum cap. So we got $50 million of the $300 million that was going to come to the state of Alaska for fishery-related impacts. We also asked NIMS to consider giving that money directly to the state of Alaska rather than through Pacific States Fishery Commission, and we lost that battle. So right now, the way that the program stands is Alaska's going to get $50 million that's going to be distributed through the Pacific States Fishery Commission, and the state of Alaska is now tasked through Department of Fish and Game to develop a spend plan. We also have learned that as part of this process and developing a spend plan, that there are five groups of people that are eligible to share this $50 million. There's the processing sector, there's the commercial fishing sector, there's the recreational charter sector, there's the aquaculture, marine mariculture section, and then there are subsistence users. So the Department of Fish and Game now is working with different user groups to try to, within each one of those categories, to decide first off, how much money should go of the $50 million into each one of those buckets or bins of categories of people, and then what kind of criteria should be used to award that $50 million. We have learned a couple of different things. Alaska is a little bit slower than some of the other states in getting this money out, but the reason is we did not want to pull fishermen off of the water to put together paperwork for the application process while fisheries were ongoing. We have also learned that the impact has to be over the calendar year of 2020. So although you might apply for money for May and June or July impacts, if you made that money back up in July, August, September, October, you may end up having to repay the federal government because it's an impact over the calendar year. So we decided from Alaska's perspective to take a little bit slower approach and not pull people away from trying to make a living to put the application process together and hopefully, you know, have a better picture of what their 2020 overall impacts will be. So right now what we're doing is we're working with different sectors. We've had meetings with the mariculture sector. We've had meetings with the processing sector. We've had meetings with the sport charter sector. We're just starting the meetings now with the commercial fishing sector. The reason we put those off to last again is we didn't want to pull people away from their fishing activities and away from trying to make a living this year, realizing that they would require them to come in and do a lot of work to get the application process done. We're just starting those meetings now, and we hope to have a spend plan kind of out for public review sometime in the middle part of September and hopefully get it to Pacific States so that they can forward that to National Marine Fisheries Service for approval so Pacific States can begin the distribution process later in the year.
Okay, well, that was a lot of great information, Commissioner Lang. I appreciate that. Let me just give a quick breakdown to make sure that I understand what you're saying. That through the CARES Act, which was the large relief bailout package that Congress passed, there was $300 million put in there for this program, but Alaska is going to get $50 million to give to pretty much any person related with fishing in the state of Alaska. And so when you start thinking about commercial fishing, you said recreational, subsistence, processors, that pile of money is going to get very thin very quick when you factor in all those people. And so that is that the case for the from what I understand about this money?
Yes. Nobody is going to be made anywhere near whole with $50 million distributed amongst the commercial fishermen, the processing sector, the recreational charter sector, the subsistence sector, and the mariculture sector.
Yeah, and so, and I would just, for me, from a bureaucratic standpoint, too, and I think that you guys probably realize this, but one of the first things that comes to my mind is, let's just say the amount that a captain on the boat could get is $1,500 out of the pile. Well, if there's 20 hours worth of paperwork behind this, that might not be worth it. Is that something that you guys are factoring in here as you decide how to distribute the money and put together the spend plan?
Yeah, so we're trying to make this as simple as possible, basically. An affidavit that says you've had some kind of COVID-related impact, direct or indirect, would make you eligible, and that we're trying to look at, you know, ways that from our lessons learned in the pink salmon disaster distribution network, how we can make this simpler to get money out the door. It's more of a stimulus than it is an actual, you know, reimbursement for all the impacts that you've had.
Yeah, and so there's a lot of questions I have here. I think the first question that I'd like to kind of parse into really quickly, though, is, you know, there seems to be a lot of questions about how this program is going to be rolled out and what it will look like for applying. But the underlying theme is that you have to show a direct or indirect loss of coronavirus based on the coronavirus to your fishery operation. Now, what would be a good factor for describing that? Because some people here in the Gulf of Alaska, as you know, lost 80% of their income because of cod, whereas, you know, that probably won't be a COVID-related situation. But salmon being bottomed out because of lack of exports, that is a COVID-related situation. What are you guys going to use to define the criteria, and how will you justify that when it comes time for auditing?
So it's going to be a self-reported requirement. Did you see a COVID, have a COVID-related direct or indirect impact? And again, that's going to be up to the fishermen to report that the way it's currently envisioned. But those are questions we're talking to the fleet about when we're putting together the different meetings across the state. So we've talked to that about the processing sector. Again, we haven't begun those discussions with the commercial fishing sector in any great detail yet because they're out fishing. So we'll have those discussions with them and hopefully come up with a spend plan that for that sector that allows self-reporting, but also hold on a second, my phone's ringing.
No problem.
Got it.
Yeah. Maybe.
You can hear it in the background. So, yeah, so we're going to work with the commercial fishing sector to basically figure that question out. Because you're right, there are fishery-related impacts, but then there's COVID-related impacts. And there's a large degree of overlap with them. And I don't think at the end of the day that we're going to see you can't make yourself more than whole. So at the end of the day, if you apply, if for instance, there's a fishery disaster relief for the cod fishery in the Gulf of Alaska, when it comes down at some point in time to reconcile them, you may not be able to apply for disaster for cod relief and COVID relief and make yourself more than whole.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. And you're drawing some distinctions here, too, that I think it's important for people to know, especially because we just kind of wrapped up that 2016 pink salmon disaster money. This isn't disaster relief. This is, like you said, it's a stimulus. There is a difference. We're not looking, I mean, it is an emergency, it is a disaster, but it's not like we saw a failed run and there was a state of emergency declared that created a disaster fund for fishermen. This is a different kind of process with different kinds of regulations, correct?
Right. This is more of a stimulus to get money flowing into the economy.
If I'm a fisherman, I know that a lot of people, because we're doing a lot of work with CARES money in every sector, is there going to be a concern for a fisherman to have to be audited for justification of this CARES money if they do accept it?
Well, the state of Alaska is not going to be doing auditing, but NIMS at some point in time may audit people. So you're going to have to fill out the application. It's going to be, I think, a relatively simple application from what we're seeing from other states, but you may end up having to prove that you're not made more than whole through your records.
Okay. So is there going to be some minimum qualification? Like you said that if you, from what you're saying, is if you feel you can justify that you were impacted negatively, do you need to look at a five-year average, a one-year average, or how would a fisherman go about making a educated and informed decision on if they were truly impacted justifiably?
Right. This is Rachel. I'll go ahead and answer that. I think those, like the commissioner said, those are exactly are the conversations that we're having with fishery participants right now, because the main thing we learned from the pink salmon disaster is we need to get industry input into these spending plans to make them implementable. And so I think in those discussions, in those preliminary discussions, and in what we're seeing from what other states are thinking about doing, because we're coordinating with the states of Washington, Oregon, and California, because there's some crossover. Generally, because of what was in the CARES Act legislation, the greater than 35% revenue loss in 2020 needs to be compared to the previous five-year average of revenue for the individual person or business. Now, so that's going to be the basic requirement under the legislation. Now, what we've already come across and what we have said in our preliminary guidance is that a business doesn't have to have been in existence for the past 5 years to be eligible for these CARES Act funds. We haven't determined the exact amount of how long the business would have to be around to be able to qualify, but we are aware that there are some businesses that may not have been going for the past 5 years, and so we're going to have to accommodate that. But that is one requirement that is in the legislation, is that your economic revenue loss of greater than 35% has to be relative to the previous five-year average. So that's the baseline eligibility that we're looking at going forward.
Okay, so fishermen should be considering this, that there is going to be some sort of base level justification. And like we mentioned earlier, it's going to get tricky for fishermen because, yeah, if you look at the last 5 years, 2020 has been a disaster for Gulf cod and pollock fishermen, and they've lost much more than 35% of the revenue. But you need to make sure that as a fisherman, you're honestly looking at your books and justifying, was 35% loss on your five-year average based upon COVID-19. Is that... You know, I really want that to be a takeaway here if that is the case. Would you agree with that statement?
Based on our understanding of the legislation and the guidelines we've received from National Marine Fisheries Service, yes. I think the loss must be primarily COVID-related. We understand it may be difficult to determine with great precision exactly what's direct and indirect with COVID, but if there are losses related to weather or a boat breakdown or something that is obviously not COVID, I think you're absolutely correct. To the degree possible, fishermen and other fishery participants should not include those types of losses in their calculations.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the clarity on that point. Now, looking through this, you guys have said several, you brought up several times an issue that we wanted to bring up too, because I was actually directly impacted by the 2016 pink salmon disaster. And I was one of the case examples of how unintuitive and somewhat difficult that process was for crew members to apply for the money. Essentially, it was just due to a breakdown, I think, in communication, and fishermen just started having things appear in their mailboxes, and it was somewhat a confusing rollout for that. And it sounds like the department has realized and recognized that reality about the 2016 Pink Salmon Disaster Fund, and you guys are making some accommodations to improve upon that. Can you explain a little bit more in detail what you guys are seeing and what changes might happen?
So you got to remember that the stimulus package money that we're talking about probably isn't going to be crew member based. This is the businesses. This is a business related model. Now, for future disaster programs, we're going to consider what we learned with crew members and move that forward into like the Gulf of Alaska PCOD disaster that may be declared, the other disasters that we have coming forward. But with the CARES Act money, this is basically a business model. So the permit holder and those people are going to be the ones receiving the stimulus checks.
Okay, that's very good to know. If this is for people that are invested in the business end of it, and of course, you know, even crew members to a certain extent have, you know, businesses that they've built up themselves as a an asset, but this is for people with permits and or boat operations, and that's an important takeaway as well. So one thing that I think was important to take away from the 2016 Pink Salmon disaster was information and how to access the information, find out what you needed to do. And this is still rolling out, even in the guidelines that are out right now from the state. This is said that it's going to be sent out on a rolling basis. So this is very much fluid at this time. But if I'm a fisherman and I want to get more details, where can I go today or a month from now in order to find out what I may be qualified for and what I need to do to get that information? Is there a hotline or a number, a representative that they can call?
So the very best place for fishery participants to go for information is the guidance document on the ADFNG website that we've already referenced. And so ADFNG prepared a document, the guidance for fisheries participants regarding CARES Act relief funding. It's on our website at adfg.alaska.gov. It's on the very front page under the highlights. And we are, it's basically a set of frequently asked questions about this CARES Act funding. And we will update this document as more information becomes available. It's a living document. And so that is the very best source of information on our process for the CARES Act funding. At the end of that document, there are instructions for fishery participants or anyone who's interested to sign up for email notifications if there are any updates to this guidance document or any other important announcements related to the CARES Act funding process for fishery participants. And so I would really encourage people to sign up for those email notifications, because we will, again, be updating the document as new information is available and as we have important announcements to make for the process. Along with those email notifications, we do have an ADFNG staff contact number on the guidance document as well. That people can use for follow-up questions. But I would just really stress that we will be updating that document. It is the best place for the currently available information. And our hope by doing this, again, was to learn from some of the challenges we had, like you mentioned, Austin, with the Pink Salmon disaster in terms of the communication and trying to really get the word out, understanding that people are in remote communities or out fishing and may have challenges keeping up with the latest information.
Well, we'll be happy to get all that information out here as best we can. We look through those the FAQ, the guidelines that you guys have, and it is important for people that are going to go and look this up that there are placeholders in, and as you say, this is going to be a living and evolving document. As more information comes available, there will be updates. And you know, here, you know, we're in a bandwidth desert where not everyone has internet, and if you do have internet, it's not good. So maybe we can find a means too of printing those out and make those available for people in communities. Would you be okay if in communities where internet is not reliable for people like the maybe at the radio station for us to print out copies to give to fishermen who can't access through the web?
Absolutely, and we've already talked about that with our staff here. Yes, if there are centralized locations in communities that would be helpful to have printed out copies of this guidance document, we'd be more than happy to work with you to do that.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate that. You know, and I know your time's valuable, and I appreciate all the time that you did give us. I want to ask two questions, and one of them will just be final thoughts from you. But my last question is, we've already established that this is a meager pie. It's a bag of Doritos to feed a whole state, essentially. Will there be any potential? I know they're talking about the HEROES Act, the second round. Is there potential for more infusion of funds into fishery relief that you are seeing?
Well, there's talk about it. I'm not going to be sitting here trying to predict what Congress may or may not do, but I think at least our congressional delegation understands that $50 million is far from what's needed to make the fishery anywhere near whole due to COVID-related impacts. So I think that they are looking at ways to supplement that pot of money to make it more whole.
Okay, great. Well, we'll keep updates coming on that as well as soon as we can hear more. Obviously, everyone's waiting with bated breath about the next round of coronavirus relief. Commissioner Vincent Lang, Deputy Commissioner Baker, I can't stress enough how amazing it was for you to come on here and give us your time like this. Are there any final thoughts that you would like to say on the air before we let you guys get back to your day?
Well, the only thing I might just add is the two things we talked about. There shouldn't be an expectation that $50 million is going to make anybody whole. So get that. I think it's important for people to realize that that is a small amount of money. We fought hard to make it bigger than $50 million, but we lost that battle politically because there are many people around the United States that also need relief. And number two is I know there's some angst over why it's taking so long, but, you know, when this first rolled out, NIMS took time to figure out how they were going to implement it, to try to make it as easy as possible through self-reporting. And then they threw the wrench in there that said basically it's not for the reporting period where your impacts are, it's for the calendar year. So take a halibut fishery, for example. If you had impacts during May and June and you didn't fish because of price, but you could fish again in September and October where you hope the price might increase, you could get a relief check for your May and June landings. But if you made it back up in September and October, you could end up repaying back. So we're trying to minimize the impact on the fishermen to make sure that they're not having to repay money back over the calendar year. Take the time to talk with them up front and hopefully get the money out, you know, get a spend plan developed by September, October timeframe where we can actually get the application process up and running and start getting money distributed. We know people need the money. But at the same time, I don't want to distribute money only to have to pull it back.
Yeah, absolutely. Never a comfortable situation. And everyone, we're making do with what we've got around here. Everyone's writing the rule books and the playbooks as we go with it. So we appreciate, you know, the effort and know that it's going to be difficult.
Then the last thing I'd like to say is I want to thank everybody out there. You know, there are some periods in March and April I was doubting we were going to have fisheries this year just because of the way the COVID mess was unraveling. But, you know, Fish and Game got the necessary infrastructure in place to put fisheries in the water. You know, the processing sector really worked hard to get plans in place that protected communities and their workers. And fishermen did the right thing in basically staying COVID safe. And because of all that, we were able to have fisheries. So I want to thank everybody for working together to make sure that we are contributing to our economy of our state during a time when tourism is down and oil prices are down, that at least fisheries is keeping some money flowing into the economy. So I want to thank everybody out, and especially the Sandpoint region, for doing the right thing and keeping everybody safe, but fishing. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Lang. Deputy Commissioner Baker, anything you'd like to say before we say goodbye?
No, I think the commissioner summed it up pretty well. Again, we are happy to take questions here at our office about the CARES Act funding. There's contact information on that document.
We'll make sure to post those links on our website here along with this interview. Commissioner Vincent Lang and Deputy Commissioner Rachel Baker from the Department of Fish and Game, thank you so much for your time and look forward to more updates. And we'll be in touch with you guys and feel free to reach out here. Anything we can do to help, we're here.
Okay. Stay safe.
You do. Thank you very much.
Yep.